From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Another hour. Or if you're just joining us, welcome. Lots of things going on in the outdoors, and the show being brought to you by HHA Sports, the number one name in single pin archery sight technology. Darton Archery, celebrating 65 years in the archery industry, made in Michigan, along with Lucky Buck, Deer Minerals. Lucky-buck.com is the link to find out where you can, cannot use Lucky Buck, where your dealers are located. Also, Costa Sunglasses and the MUCC. Did I forget anybody? No, I think I got everybody. Very happy to have everybody on board this year and bringing the show. Before we get into our next guest, Tom Nelson, want to remind you that the DNR has posted the dates for the early teal season, and that is coming up September 1st, when you can start hunting teal. Again, go to the Michigan DNR website, michigan.gov/DNR, but the dates have been announced for the early teal season, teal identification on the website as well. And that's just one of the things getting underway. Also, the Woods and Water Weekend coming up in Imlay City, September 11th through the 13th. We will be there. We'll be hanging out with Darton Archery amongst other people. So we look forward to seeing you all there. This is going to be a very big event again this year, another Woods and Water Weekend. And thanks to those guys for jumping on board with us so we can bring you that information. Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel, longtime friend, Michigan resident, joining us right now. Tom, we're about just over a month away, bow season in Michigan. And I was up at the Deer Ranch up in St. Ignace. Sarah Marie and I were up there. And you're starting to see that transformation, the bucks up there. I know it's penned animals, but still, they go through the same transformation as everything else. They're starting to lose the velvet, and they're starting to get a little thicker, looking pretty cool up there. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Duran. Always a pleasure to be on the show. And you're right. The things are happening right now. I actually pulled a trail camera yesterday that had a picture of a buck with half his velvet gone, you know, just hanging from his rack there, and you know they're starting to change color. They're shedding that summer coat now, putting on that fall coat. They look almost kind of raggy or ratty, as my wife calls it. You know, right now as they're kind of mottled, and so their hair, their coat's changing. The racks are about as big as they're going to get, and are hardening up, and the velvet's going to come shortly.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. You know, up north, things seem to progress a little bit faster with some of the animals. I mean, down here, I'm still seeing a lot of small fawns with spots. And I know we had a kind of a difficult long winter last year. And I've got one in particular that's hanging around my house. And you know, sometimes you think that the doe is around, but there has been no doe with this one. As a matter of fact, it tried to get in with another doe that had twins, and she kind of kicked him out.
Yeah, you know, it's very possible it was hit by a car or something natural happened to it, but they're plenty capable of surviving on their own right now from here on out. And going back to what you said about seeing a lot of spotted fawns, that's, you know, it's still August. We have to remember that, albeit we're anxious, you know, for October 1st to roll around. But the deer will change a lot. Those fawns that are spotted right now will darken up through the month of September. These next 30 days, you'll see a big change physically in the looks of the deer, the cosmetics of the deer right now. You just wait. But it's also not unusual to see young spotted fawns, you know, ones that were born late with their spots on right into November. We had one that we nicknamed Itchy on our place last year. My wife and I would see the single doe with a late-born fawn, and it looked like it was at least a month or two behind, and it looked like a month old, now I'm older than that, a 8-week-old fawn, even in the November. So it's, you know, a lot of factors come into play if they're bred during that third, you know, second rut or whatever, and born late. So it's not unusual what you're seeing, Duran.
Now, in conversation I had with you earlier this week, you said you were out at your property hanging tree stands. And you know, this is the time that we always say, we always get you on here because it's like it's always coming better from somebody else that hanging tree stands now is a good idea and not November 14th for gun season or September 30th for bow season.
That's a very true fact. And it always, to me, it just seems like an elementary subject, that something that, you know, everybody should do or knows, you know, to get out there and hang their stands well in advance, when in fact, perhaps the majority of bow hunters and gun hunters, for that matter, are out there the week before, you know, out in their woods, hanging stands, clearing shooting lanes. And I've talked about this on the show before. It's, in my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes hunters make, and that is educating the deer before the season opens. So I always, with my wife helping me, try to get our stands hung up well in advance. And guys will tell me often, well, you know, I don't own property, or I'm hunting state land, so I can't, you know, hang my stands. You know, they'll get stolen, or you can't leave them out there. But there's a lot more to than just placing your stand. There's tree stand prep. You can go in there well in advance, clear out your shooting lanes, trim the tree out so it's all ready, so you can silently and stealthily sneak in, hang your stand without disturbing the local deer, and get out of there. So I have stands, like we hung 5 stands, Durant. Mm-hmm. Those are my October early season stands. But I also have stands that I prepped. That's the word I'll use, the term prepped. I've got them already, and they're rut stands. I won't even hunt till Halloween and after. But I've got them all ready to go. So again, I can sneak in there, pop that stand up, and hold a surprise party for those deer, so they won't have a clue that I'm in the area. But get in there and get everything done well in advance. Stomping around just prior to going out and sitting in a stand, not a good idea.
No, and trail cams too. Trail cams right now is very important, because look, essentially what you're going to see is some of the deer that are in your area, but that whole ball game changes come, you know, late October, early November.
Yeah. Absolutely, Durant. Basically, you know, and we utilize trail cameras. We put cuttingbacks out throughout the property, our property, and we monitor the deer and, you know, see this buck and that. But it's always amazing, as you said, we'll watch a buck all summer, visually see him, but mostly, you know, cuttingbacks. I let the trail cams do my low-impact scouting, but we'll check them and go, gosh, that's a great buck, and end up, you know, with 25 pictures over the summer of him. Bow season rolls around, and it's like, where'd he go? And that's not uncommon. They have such a small core area right now, antlered bucks do, in the summertime. Very small core area that they stay in, protecting their antlers. They just don't travel much. But as fall progresses, the testosterone kicks up. They get out there and they expand their area immensely. Hence, you know, a buck that you watched all summer gets shot 4 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact. But then again, at the same time, bucks you've never seen are appearing on your property that you had no pictures of, and you're like, where was this guy all summer? Well, he was, you know, his core area was 2 miles away, but now he's expanded and he's, you know, roaming through your property. So,
sure. Tom Nelson joins us here. He is the host of The American Archer on the Outdoor Channel. And how many years, Tom? I ask you this every year because I always forget. How many years is it now?
20 years this month.
Wow. Congratulations, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Who would have ever guessed?
You know what? We turned 9 in September, and you being one of the first guests on the show, you know, it's amazing to me that, again, we didn't think we'd last a couple of weeks, and we're going into our, you know, we're going to celebrate our 9th year on September 30th, which, oddly enough, is the day before bow season.
That's a perfect date for it, to the anniversary. But I remember standing out in the parking lot talking to you, Duran, the first time I appeared on the show, which I can't remember if it was the first or second episode, but it was right away, and you were saying, gosh, do you think this will ever make it? Will it take off? And I can remember encouraging you, going, yeah, there's nothing like it. I think you're going to do great. And again, like you said, here you are 9 years later.
Absolutely.
Stronger every year.
And we appreciate it, man. We're going to talk to you more here in a couple of seconds. Speaking with Tom Nelson, host of The American Archer. It's Wild Michigan, brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. Find the link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez here on the Michigan Talk Network. Woods and Water Weekend coming up September 11th through the 13th. Going to be a big time, man. We'll be out there. Hopefully we'll see you guys out there as well in Imlay City. Back with Tom Nelson, the American Archer, the host. 20 years this year of the American Archer. Man, Tom, has how television, outdoor television, has progressed and regressed all at the same time.
That's so true. You know, when we started, Duran, I'm proud to say we were, the American Archer TV show was the only archery/bow hunting TV show on the outdoor channels. And the outdoor channel was the only game in town. There were no other sister outdoor hunting type networks. And I'm very blessed to say we were number one.
And now, you know, I don't care if I take heat for these comments because it's the absolute truth. Nowadays, anybody and their brother can get a TV show if they have the sponsorships. And I've watched recently some of the most painful outdoor television I've ever seen in my life.
That makes me chuckle. I concur. Let me just say that.
You know, and this is, and look, I'm not saying, you know, look, I'm sure they're great people, but I just sit there and I see a guy that is showing the footage. And before even a shot is taken, he says, "Oh, well, I missed that one," and proceeds to finish the story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, come on, the quality of outdoors television with the advent of five different networks and everybody having a camera, it's become very difficult to watch. But conversely, I had conversation with a mutual friend, which I will tell you off air who it was, and you could probably guess. He goes, "You know what?" He says, "Tom's not exactly the most exciting person to watch, but damn it, he's awesome. He's honest." Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, okay, yeah, I get that. I mean, you're not, you know, the jump up and down hoot holler. Tom, you've got so much information, so much that you've brought to the show. That's what makes it so successful. And you know, the person that I know is the same person that I see on TV. Very just kind of humble and honest and to the point. And that's what I think has really made that show so successful. And I hope that wasn't a beating that you didn't see coming.
Yep. I'm humbled by those comments, and I appreciate it. But yeah, I'm nobody special. I was just fortunate to be on the ground floor of, you know, when the outdoor television was in its infancy, and was able to get on board, and it was a lot easier back then, and then maintain sponsors and maintain viewership, and we're still here. I remember telling my wife, Duran, telling her, saying, when it started, I said, "Boy, wouldn't this be awesome if this lasted 5 years?" And here we are 20 years later, as strong as ever and moving forward. So I'm very blessed. I don't take it for granted ever. I mean, I feel very blessed.
Well, I tell you, you've helped me, and I say this a million times, you've helped me grow as a hunter and as a sportsman in this state and in this sport that is archery. I didn't know anything about archery when I first started. I'd never picked up a bow until show one when I got a bow put in my hands. and man, your phone rang off the hook a lot. And I've been very fortunate to have known you to have this all happen.
Well, you were a good student. You adhered to what I told you, and you learned quick, and you didn't make any mistakes. I mean, you did everything right, and it showed. Now, you know, you turned into quite the accomplished bow hunter, and I'm proud of you. I'll be honest.
Thanks, man. That means a lot. And you know, if we can help people here on the show, that really to me is the mark of our success as to what we do here. Off air, we talked a little bit about some of the secrets, you know, about how deer can be manipulated because they're kind of lazy in a way. You know, they don't like to go too far from food sources, from bedding sources, but maybe to alter their route to better serve where your tree stand is some of the ways we can get them in close.
Oh, absolutely. And as you said, I don't think lazy is the correct term, but it's not. They take advantage of any given situation. Hence the reason I'll mow paths. I have, as I told you on the break, I have an old beater lawnmower I bought on the side of the road for $25, and I use it I wouldn't mow my yard with it, but I use it to mow trails through the woods, and I make easy paths, basically steering the deer, giving them the path of least resistance that brings them within bow range of tree stands. And they will follow those paths over time, and they'll desert a crowded, obstacle-filled runway to walk on a clear, easy path through the woods. I rake paths. I mow paths. I steer deer by, you know, putting brush at runway crossings over fence lines there where I don't want them to jump, basically making them use a spot, a crossing in the fence that's to my advantage within bow range. But you can easily steer deer past your stand.
I guess lazy was an improper term. I don't want to offend the deer.
I know what you mean, because they look, yeah, they'll always, you know, go to the nearest food source or the nearest cover, you know, but basically they're smart. They don't want to move any more than they have to, and if they've got everything, the small patch of woods they need, who knew by, easy crossing, easy trail, that's what they're going to use. And but, you know, you can take advantage of that by, again, like I said, just clearing some paths that there's no resistance, no deadfalls, where deer can easily maneuver through the woods. And if you move them past or steer them past your stand, it can pay off in back straps. So,
yeah, and that's what we're looking for definitely this year. We're taking some new avenues, trying some new equipment this year. Looking forward to doing that. And we talked with Ted Harpham earlier from Dart and Archery, one of our sponsors here on the show. And Tom, if it's anybody that knows what to look for in a bow, it's you. You worked with Anderson Archery for so many years. You help people get fit for a bow, and it has to be about what fits people rather than what fits the needs or the inventory of the seller.
Yes, and you know, one of the things that used to drive me crazy would be a guy would bring his buddy in and to buy a new bow or get started, and the gentleman that would bring him in would say, "Oh, he wants an X brand bow," and I would say, you know, so often I'm like, you know, really, we should see what fits this guy. You know, he's new. He doesn't need to get this, you know, ultra hard to shoot, ultra fast bow. You know, should get him in at this level. But it is. It's almost like going out to buy a pair of shoes. Just because your buddy wears a size 11 doesn't mean you should buy his size 11. You know, you want to get something that fits and you'll just shoot it better and enjoy it more. But it's a common mistake. That's the problem with buying used equipment. You know,
sure,
it might fit this guy but not you. The weight range might be too heavy, and again, today's bows are so adjustable, you know, you can usually make them fit. But I think, Duran, one of the biggest reasons people get out of the sport of archery is that they start out with equipment that does not fit them, that is incorrect for them, and they never shoot it well, and it sits in the closet because it's not fun to shoot, they don't shoot it well, and they get discouraged and quit.
Well, you know, it's definitely some good information, and you know, again, always hearing it from other sources, I think tends to drive people in the right direction. You know, and that's why we bring you guys on here. And again, American Archer starting their 20 years. You just got back from Wyoming with a nice antelope hunt. Real quickly, Tom, where are you off to next? Oh, this weekend, Cabela's, right?
I'll be at the Dundee Cabela's this Saturday only, and I'll be there from 10 until 3. I'm giving a seminar on the 10 most common mistakes bow hunters make on Saturday at 2 o'clock.
All right. Check him out. Tom Nelson, the American Archer at Cabela's with Wild Michigan.